Latino Stories, Historias Latinas, es un podcast que nace del proyecto de narrativas orales de latinos en Ohio, Oral Narratives of Latinos in Ohio, con entrevistas en español, inglés, and Spanglish. Welcome to Latino Stories. I'm Elena Fowles. My guest today is Ruben Espinosa. Ruben Espinosa is Associate Professor of English at Arizona State University and Associate Director of the Arizona Center for Medieval Studies. He's the author of Shakespeare on the Shades of Racism, Masculinity and Marian Efficacy in Shakespeare's England, and co-editor of Shakespeare and Immigration. He begins his term as the president of the Shakespeare Association of America in April of this year, 2024, and he's currently at work on his next monograph titled Shakespeare on the Border, Language, Legitimacy, and La Frontera. Welcome to the studio in San Antonio, Ruben.
Thank you, Elena. Thanks for having me.
Great. Ruben, are you from Arizona?
I'm not. I'm from El Paso, Texas.
Okay. Tell me about growing up in El Paso.
I mean, it's a border town, 80% Chicanx population, and, you know, I was born in the 70s, so my whole childhood was it was very fluid back then. You know, we would go back and forth from Juarez, you know, had family in Juarez. My mom's doctor was in Juarez, so I was actually born in Juarez, even though she brought me straight over to El Paso after. But it was a great, you know, kind of a bicultural experience. I'm the youngest of four, so my older siblings all knew English by the time, you know, I was born, and my parents spoke Spanish, so I grew up with both languages in the household. You know, my brother always says he learned English through Sesame Street. I didn't have to do that, but the city itself, it's a great city.
Mm-hmm. So have you always lived on the borderlands?
Aside from graduate school, yeah, where I was in Colorado, but near, certainly in the West, and you know, gravitate toward the Southwest, so yeah, very familiar with the borderlands.
Great. How did you become interested in Shakespeare studies?
I think literature at large. I mean, it was in high school, my junior English high school teacher. I think I fell in love with literature, but, you know, I was not cognizant at the time, but just in terms of what we were being given to read, and it was a lot of white authors, right? Mm-hmm. So Thoreau, Wordsworth, Hemingway, Faulkner, you know, and right. this was constant, and Shakespeare was among them. And so I developed a love of literature. He was within that. But it wasn't until later in life that I recognized, like, there's a lot of Chicano writers, right, who I'm never exposed to. And, you know, thinking about El Paso and the population there, right? I mean, it's just I look back on that in awe and think there wasn't a concerted effort to try to bring in, you know, authors who looked like me, you know, Spanish writing authors. And so it was a lot of that. But at the end of the day, I mean, I think I love literature for its capaciousness, and I think Shakespeare has a lot in there. And so it's been interesting.
It's interesting, right, to reflect on our own journey into literature or the things that we study. Even in K through 12, so I graduated from a high school in Mexico, but I haven't gone back to see what really were we reading, right? And to think about what authors, from what I can remember, primarily male at least. Yeah. Certainly, I don't remember reading any authors from indigenous communities. It was really brushed through, right? And so at that time, I wasn't critical of that. I was just like, okay, you know, that's what the curriculum is. And it is not until later, right, as I was in college and then now, obviously, as a professor, that you're thinking about how are we formed, right? How are our minds formed? And I'm saying this because although we're trying to change a lot of our curriculum in a lot of institutions and a lot of even K through 12, you know, we heard from a teacher earlier today about what the work that she's doing, including Borderlands Shakespeare in the classroom through corridos, right? Yeah. But sadly, there is a lot of programs that are very defensive about that change, right? Because it is uncomfortable. It is maybe unfamiliar, but how are we really serving our students? So this is a question just that I think about a lot as I plan my own my own work, my own research, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's spot on. And I think, you know, a lot of what I got in terms of that literature was really kind of on this, I always say, like, it was on the street, right? I mean, it was through friends who were recommending Baldwin, you know, and, you know, started, you know, I wasn't exposed to that work within classroom settings. Mm-hmm. It was always outside of it. And in the U.S. in particular, you talk about growing up in Mexico. In the U.S. in particular, I mean, there was this big, obviously, pressure to assimilate, right, and to identify with whiteness. And so as a lover of literature, I always tell the story that, you know, the Dead Poets Society, I mean, was something that I was aspiring to be, you know, a lover of literature, like all those white kids in a private, you know, right, affluent right. school. And that's not who I was. But
right, yeah. right. Ruben, what or who has influenced your work as a Shakespeare scholar? Were there many other Latinas, Chicanas in your field when you started?
No. So yeah, the answer is no. At least not, you know, Latinxes who were working on Shakespeare through this lens, right, or mm-hmm. attentive to issues of Latinx or Chicanx identity. But certainly the group of scholars that have been very supportive and where I gravitated were those who were working on issues of race, so critical race studies. And I was lucky. I mean, when I was working on the collection of Shakespeare and Immigration, I was an early career scholar, and some of the contributors to that have proven to be like incredible mentors and mm-hmm. just kind of wonderful, wonderful people that I was able to meet, chief among them, you know, Peter Erickson, who's done amazing work on critical race studies. And so through that community, Bernadette Andrea, who used to teach at UT San Antonio, and she works on Islam and Shakespeare. So they were looking and thinking about racial formations. And serendipitously, you know, I had presented at one point on Mexican identities in YouTube Shakespeare. And one of the people who at the MLA, and as you know, the MLA is massive, and, you know, sometimes the audiences are very small, right, in these morning sessions. But luckily, one year I had in the audience, a student of Ayanna Thompson's who came and spoke to me after and said, you know, Ayanna would love to get to know your work. And, you know, I was very familiar with her, but she introduced me to Ayanna, and that has been transformative. So Ayanna works on critical race studies. And more than that, I mean, she's just, you know, kind of organized for social justice, racial justice type endeavors. So even though the Arizona Center for Medieval and Renaissance Studies sounds about as stuffy as it can sound, ACMRS is like a vehicle for racial justice. So we have been, you know, the programming, the Mellon funding that we have is seeking to transform the field and draw attention to race studies. You know, by nature of my positionality, I mean, I started thinking about where are the gaps, you know, and there were other scholars working on Latinx Shakespeare. And, you know, it was attentive to kind of theater history, to contemporary theater with Latinx actors, Latinx stories, right? But from my perspective, missing the edge of, you know, are we really thinking about racial justice, mm-hmm. right? So wanting to talk about maybe ethnicity, if you will, right? But without thinking about the actual challenges and lived experiences of Chicanxes. So I took a page out of Ayanna's work and people's work who are really engaging with the social issues as opposed to kind of centering on Shakespeare. So it's, mm-hmm. yeah, I always feel like Shakespeare's a vehicle, not the thing itself.
Yeah. What do you see as the relationship between Borderlands Shakespeare and Teatro Campesino?
Yeah, that's a great question. I will readily admit, like, my knowledge of, you know, where Shakespeare was coming in Teatro Campesino is maybe not in place, but I think Borderlands Shakespeare has the same ethos of that. I think, you know, most of these writers, and certainly the ones in you know, Catherine Gillen, Adriana Santos, and Catherine Romero Santos's collection, are definitely attuned to the way that theater can draw attention to these pertinent social issues in our present moment here, right? And really aimed at audiences where those issues are affecting them most here, right? And how they can think about challenging those structures. And so I think in that regard, you know, it's like Teatro Campesino. It is a different movement. And I think there is nothing right. quite like Teatro Campesino because mm-hmm. of what the energy surrounding that. But I feel like Borderlands Shakespeare owes a lot to Teatro Campesino in terms of the energies that are being brought mm-hmm. to the table.
Right, yeah. right. How does your work speak to the experiences of Black and Brown students specifically? I mean, how are they to engage critically with Shakespeare studies as minoritized groups?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that's been, on the one hand, the challenge, but also the purpose of what I try to do with students. And you know, more and more when I was teaching at UTEP, it was, you know, it was a situation where, again, 80%, you know, Chicanx population, those students, you know, often, it was easy to sell Shakespeare. I could be a traditional Shakespeare scholar and just, you know, talk about how brilliant he is and how his works, you know, are just kind of conceived and what he is doing with the literature and sell it. And they would buy it. And I think it would be fine. But, you know, at the end of the day, is it meaningful to them, right? How is it resonating with them? And I was finding that it was doing them a disservice. And so I had a shift. I mean, you know, a few years into teaching, I thought, like, I'm going about this the wrong way, you know. And I always admit that I used to be like, Shakespeare was born in, you know, and perpetuate the myth of Shakespeare and draw attention to that. But, you know, I started opening my classes with asking why Shakespeare, mm-hmm. and getting them to think about, like, why is this the only course you're required to take that focuses on one individual? Like, mm-hmm. why? And why are the other ethnic literature courses like grouping all these other works into, what are we centering? And by doing that, it allowed them to think about, like, why should Shakespeare matter to me? And so luckily now there's a lot of work out there. There are a lot of plays, a lot of artifacts I can look at. And it's been really wonderful to think about, like, you know, how different authors, how, you know, Latinx authors are engaging his works, even if it's minimal, even if it's just like one line in a novel, like Emma Perez says, you know, Forgetting the Alamo. It's like Hamlet and Othello comes up in one line, and really thinking about, like, what is she doing with that? Why is she bringing Shakespeare in? And from my perspective, she brings him in just to talk about how pointless that is. Like, we don't need him, and, you know, to tell that story, right? We can tell our stories. And that's where I encourage students to think about telling their story. So one of my favorite assignments is getting them to adapt a scene from Shakespeare with a contemporary social issue of their choice. And on the border, Elena, you would be, it's like some wonderful productions, and often about linguistic identity and violence and unbelonging. And I think, like, that's it. Like, right. That's the end. Yeah.
Have you ever gotten any pushback from students that say, why do I have to take this course? I mean, obviously, you, once they come to your class, they understand sort of where you're going with it. And I ask you this because I recently, so I'm teaching a course on linguistic language experiences of U.S. Latinos. A lot of the conversations are around the border, right? Yeah. Although we read experiences from people everywhere in the U.S. And one of the students mentioned a somebody that's studying to be a teacher, right, of English. Yeah. And he mentioned, you know, that he had required a Shakespeare class to take. And the reason why it's great, right, the way he went about it, because we were talking about how institutions determine power, right? Yeah. Who has power? What language has power? What literature, right, is worth studying, and so on. And so, you know, he was having those questions as we were talking in class about linguistic dominance, right, of English only practices, of English only. What about Spanish? What about, you know, where does Spanish fit into, especially places like this, but also just the U.S., the U.S. as a whole. I mean, Spanish is a language from the U.S. Yeah. So I'm asking you because I'm interested in seeing what students feel when they say, oh, okay, I have to take this course, even though I don't see how I could possibly benefit from it or, like, apply it to my future, you know, teaching career.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a great entry point into not just inviting those questions, right, but really embracing it and having them wrestle with that throughout the semester. So I'm not, you know, I'm in a position where I could say, well, let me justify it for you. That's not my aim at all. I think I'm asking them to really be critical of it. And more than that, to challenge those structures. And so, you know, I never teach Shakespeare without bringing in voices of people of color. So, you know, as I'm thinking about Othello, for example, I bring in, you know, Toni Morrison's Desdemona, Keith Hamilton Cobb, a Black actor and playwright, has a really great play called American Moor. And so these are, you know, these are works that, you know, appropriate Othello, that appropriate Shakespeare, but through the voices of Black individuals. And I think it's critical. And or Valeria Luiselli is, you know, Shakespeare New Mexico, and getting a Mexican voice in there to think about how they are engaging with Shakespeare, because I think that's important, and I think that's the right attitude. I think there has to be a sense of we have to decenter it from Shakespeare. I think people are often surprised when I say that, because it's, you know, it's job stability. It's who pays the bills for me, right? Shakespeare. But I think it's important if we have any sense of his longevity, it has to be, you know, on different terms. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I think, you know, if there is resistance, I think students find a very sympathetic ear when they come to my classes now. I think there are students, though, even, I should say, mm-hmm. and, you know, Chicanx students who are resistant also to perspectives of Shakespeare in this light. You know, and I've had students challenge me and ask me, like, why are you making me, you know, talking to us about Trayvon Martin? This is a Shakespeare class. And we'd be focused on Shakespeare. I'm like, yes, but you got to think about like what that legacy is, right? And why we get to this point of where we're thinking about racial injustice and how Shakespeare factors therein. And so mm-hmm. I think those are the, you know, making the conversations about issues that are important to the students is, from my perspective, the key. And there's no way at the end of the day that I'm going to be able to justify and say like, yes, Shakespeare is good for you, right? He's, you know, as Anna Thompson says, like, he's your spinach, right? You know, that's what people say, but like, you have to question like, why is he good for me? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the key for a lot of us, and you asked earlier, like where I kind of thought about came in as a Chicano, right? In engaging with Shakespeare, the key I think is recognizing that racialized vocabularies and that language goes hand in hand with the early modern period. They are starting to create language that elevates whiteness, right? Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of, you know, the first sonnet of Shakespeare's 154 sonnet sequence, right, is, you know, from fairest creatures we desire increase. And fair in that period not only means beautiful, but it means white. Mm-hmm. And so that's like, we are looking to populate the world with white creatures. And it's racist.
Right.
I think that's, you have to kind of engage that and say like, why is it important? Well, because you can better understand why you're in the situation you are in now, why we're looking at the militarized border, why we're looking at those acts of resistance, why they devalue your life, right? And literature is part of that, you know, legacy, and Shakespeare isn't part of that legacy. And so if I'm going to say this is why you should study Shakespeare, it's for that, not because he's universal and beautiful.
Right. That's a great answer. I like, now I want to go read it. So, Ruben, you're working on a new book project because you haven't done enough, right? And the book is titled Shakespeare on the Border, Language, Legitimacy in La Frontera. Talk to us about this work.
Yes, it's been a long project. I feel, you know, somebody was recently telling me about a colleague of ours who's been working on a book for 30 years, and I was like, oh no, this is going to be me. I've taken on other projects, but it's rooted in thinking about issues of linguistic identity, how we imagine Shakespeare's legacy, right? And so I'm trying to reimagine it, really, you know, think about bilingualism as an asset, which it is, to think about the borderland experience and borderland epistemology, centering that in terms of how we can see Shakespeare in a different way when we think about Shakespeare from the perspective of the border and specifically in brown spaces, right? And so I think one of the things that I bring into this project is, one, the border is not a metaphor, right? And so somebody who's grown up on the border, I appreciate it. I think an Unsalduan perspective is great in terms of thinking about metaphorical borders, but I also think about like the physical border, mm-hmm. right? And as somebody who grew up in El Paso, you know, I still remember the trips into Juarez. You know, we'd go in for the day or visit family, and it being wonderful, you know, it being fun and coming up on the bridge and still it being kind of like weirdly festive because paleteros are there, you know, mm-hmm. you're whatnot. Mm-hmm. But then getting to the checkpoint and just, you know, kind of like my mom saying, ya cállense, vamos a cruzar, right? And it's this moment of a shift where you just tighten and you pass that, you know, kind of fake border, right? And that's a real border, and come into your home space again. And it's just like, that is, you know, so I really want to think about that moment, that crossing. So thinking about crossing into Shakespeare, but also Shakespeare crossing into the brown spaces, right? And how we can, you know, negotiate those Latinx perspectives, the legacy of white supremacy that he brings, and really to think about a legacy of our own. And so, you know, I'm looking at an array of pieces from popular culture, from YouTube videos to fiction to some theater, but really focusing on it broadly in terms of like, where is he coming up in Latinx productions, you know, either explicitly or implicitly, and then what we can do with that and reimagining like this view of Shakespeare, right, for future audiences. And so Yeah, it's been edifying. There's a great community, and you know, this Borderlands conference is a testament to that. I think it's right. Capacious.
And how long have you been working on this?
Oh, don't ask me. No, I've been. So this has been a project since probably now 2017 is in earnest when I started working on it. And I will admit, I was approached by the editors of a series, Spotlight on Shakespeare, which is kind of geared toward more general audiences. So it was a kind of new genre. Mm-hmm. To write this book, which is Shakespeare and the Shades of Racism. And the way they approached it, they said, it's like a side project. You can keep working on your book. And I'm like, sure it is. And I believed them. But it was a lot of, I think in a lot of ways, it was a project that I needed to be writing at that point, because it's this culminated into, you think about, you know, 2016 or so, right? This culminated into the moment of George Floyd in 2020. That's when I finished the project, actually. I was kind of done with it that summer and was getting ready. You know, I was doing final revisions, and then George Floyd happened. And everything I was arguing about was like how we're not paying attention to the racial injustice and what we're not doing. And then suddenly I was like, oh, like this is a major shift, you know. And I spoke to the editors and to friends of mine who, you know, and I said, I have to rewrite this book if I'm going to do it. And everybody agreed. They're like, you don't, just write an afterword acknowledging that. And I think that's what I did. That's all to say that and the pandemic took me into this other area. And then I had the, you know, the position at ASU. And so I've been working on that. Like, it sounds like I'm making excuses for.
No, that's something that I talk to my students all the time, right? Like, there's things that happen where we read something a few years from now and it's different because we've lived different experiences. We think differently because we've lived in that pandemic, yeah. Right? And so this sense of urgency that had been dormant, yeah. Right? It became like real. People were dying and yeah. Things like that. I think about me as a writer too. Initially, I didn't feel like I had anything to contribute. Oh. And it was until, you know, 2015 that I started, okay, yes, I can say, you know, this or that. I felt that I could do it at that time. And so I think, you know, sometimes you need that time. Although it doesn't feel like you're just brewing.
Not necessarily. I love that, Elena. I love. Yeah, I mean, your work is great. So this is, yeah, a testament to that. I do. I think that. There is. I think that, you know, I was told this early on. It was like, give it, especially with my first book. You know, people were like, it needs more time. I remember, one of the readers was like, I think he needs some more time to just. But I wanted to get that book out, and it was like pragmatic, and it wasn't like a. It wasn't a love story with that book. You know, I wrote it. I was cut my teeth as a new historicist. I'm proud of it and the work, but it's not, you know, it wasn't. I remember seeing that book at my big conference, right, at the, you know, at the book exhibit. And I had always imagined, like, wow, how cool would it be to have your book? And it was so anticlimactic. And I kind of looked around. I was like, who am I writing for? Like, what am I doing? And so I think there is value in that, especially when it's a book that you love. And this is what this feels like. And I feel like, you know, I do have a lot of the chapters written in various forms. And I have a, you know, obviously like this conception of it, but I want to get it just right. I'm not trying to be a perfectionist with it. I do want it out there. I think it's important, you know, on some level. But it's exciting to be working on it. And I feel... There are moments. I mean, there are moments where I'm like, all right, now I can turn to this and get it done. And then something comes up.
So, so when should we
wait? I'm saying it now. Yeah. No, I mean, my goal would be to finish it this year, a monograph this year. So I've been in contact with some presses that, okay. You know, I might be interested.
Well, yeah. It's exciting. A lot of good things we'll happening. Yeah. Yes. Rubén, muchas gracias por esta conversación.
Gracias. Thank you. Thanks for having me.